Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. Welcome in. This is the Red Bird Reboot Podcast. I am your host, Blake Murphy 7, and apologies for last week. I know I promised a show for you guys. Did record one. The audio quality was not quite up to par. A lot of choppiness in between. And before I had time to actually re-record, I had a trip planned. Ended up heading out of Arizona to Florida for a few days. Finally get back and having a spot to record now on the eve of, well, I should say on the day of cutdown day. Feeling like we're on the eve of the NFL season. We finished preseason games number 1, 2, and 3. We'll go through a few of those takeaways, take a look at the initial 53-man roster, and then, of course, talk about some of the moves that have been made and why I think that what most national media are talking about tanking in the general scheme, in specific moves, and ultimately why I think that there are pieces of the puzzle that are correct and pieces that are not. That's going to kick us all off here first, starting with the Arizona Cardinals preseason performance. We talked about week one, guys who were impressive, guys who were not. Let's talk about week two and three, because there's not a lot of time needed, in my opinion, to talk about week two. It was a rough showing all around for the Arizona Cardinals. The Kansas City Chiefs first team offense, came out and actually did struggle a bit. They ran the ball not very effectively, had a few penalties. This is when Buda Baker, of course, was on the field for the Cards. And over time, my guess that I had was that you would start to see the Cardinals' depth players would start giving up more and more chunks on the interior when rushing. And when you saw Isaiah Pacheco come in, when you saw Jerick McKinnon come in, suddenly the Chiefs' offense looked a lot more functional. That's something that I think we can at least just look at with a guy like Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And really, he's a third-down back who was given that first-team type of draft grade. It was taken in the first round. At the end of the day, the Chiefs beat the Cardinals 38-10. You end up seeing probably at the end of the game, with a little bit of maybe unfairness, Blaine Gabbert, a top 10 pick who's been in the league since 2011. You're talking about a guy who's drafted in the same class as Cam Newton and Patrick Peterson. He completes 7 of 8 for 120 yards and 2 touchdowns. Clayton Tune, on the other hand, completes about half his passes for 133 yards. And we see that Colt McCoy essentially barely sees time on the field for the most part for the Arizona Cardinals. He ends up throwing, I think it was about 8 passes total for about 25 yards. And this really ultimately has been kind of the Colt McCoy experience as far as with checkdowns, not being able to really push the ball downfield and not being quite accurate. The biggest thing I think that we saw in this game as far as takeaways were Keyonte Ingram locked up the running back 2 job. We got to see at least a bit of the defense be able to get guys on the field that maybe where the Cardinals will look for this next week. Christian Matthew had 4 tackles in the game, did not look especially good. Talking about at least the defensive line did not look very good. And of course, everyone has talked to death about the Isaiah Simmons tackling effort. Looking at some of the film, what I believe more the context behind that was Simmons is going toward a guy, tackles him, ends up lowering the shoulder, something that's difficult to do, obviously, for taller players. Still, in today's NFL, you have to adjust. He lets up on the quarterback later as the quarterback runs in for the touchdown, and perhaps he was just afraid of another flag at that point. It's been a difficult process for him. You end up at least, I think, seeing Antonio Hamilton play quite a few more snaps, I think, than maybe we'd expected, but it feels ultimately like the guy who got a smaller number of snaps at the beginning was kind of pulled out with the rest of the starters. That was Catrell Clark, the 6th round pick, and if there's anything I think we can take away from that preseason game, the biggest positive was Nolan Cooney. He had 4 punts, averaged 54.3 yards. That's an insane amount for punts. Landed 2 inside the 20-yard line for a total of 217 yards. So he outpunted Matt Hawk in his solo punt in that game by 8 yards, and if you look at the rounding up, it just probably about 9, almost 10 yards or so that he was able to outpunt him. That's led to where we've seen with the Arizona Cardinals kind of entering that last and third preseason game. We've seen the Cardinals having some players that were maybe on the bubble, guys who we had felt like just hadn't shown the same flashes, or were at least the decision to make them play that long was perhaps indicative of what was about to happen to them. And that would be the case with some players like Rashard Lawrence and others such as, I think the name that pops out at least to me here is, on tip of my tongue, Corey Clement. Corey Clement played a lot of snaps. He had taken some time as being the Cardinals' special teams pass protector on punt coverage specifically. So usually when you're the punt protector, it's an important area where you don't want to get bowled over. You don't want to be... essentially, you want to be that stalwart rock. We've also seen that spot be used for some trick plays. Ezekiel Turner, 1 year for the Cardinals, did end up playing kind of that position, snuck forward against the Eagles and had that fourth down conversion with the Cliff Kingsbury era. That's all well and good, and I think that the former Eagles coaches and Jonathan Gannon, the other guys in his staff, may have seen that as a role for Corey Clement. But on the offensive side, we've seen how he was used so much in that fourth preseason game. We saw that there was some younger guys on the roster in Amari DiMercato and Keontae Ingram. It felt like Tyson Williams was a guy they added to see if he had additional juice. And he ended up, unfortunately, getting hurt and ended up long-term released from the team. The real takeaway from that ultimately was that Clayton Tune did show that he's capable of being a backup in this league. But as far as when it comes to starting for a team or starting with the expectation of winning, he's still a little ways off. And this is natural. This is a fifth-round rookie we're talking about. He was productive, but he's not someone that you invested a high pick into, someone you're going to build and scheme around for the most part. Really, what he's done has shown that it's not going to be necessarily this, all right, we're going to be trotting out the wildcat every snap this game because we just do not trust the quarterback that we have. He showed also that he was more capable than Colt McCoy as far as whether it was being able to escape pressure, get outside of the pocket, being able to throw deep, get a few touchdowns in the preseason. And I do think that long term, you know, like people always try to say that the prototypical backups that make it as starters, there's been a couple of those, some other investments. Tom Brady is obviously the gold standard. I don't think anyone's looking at Clayton Tune and saying that he's going to be that guy. No one was saying that about Kurt Warner, but you know, you can say that some of the better guys who come out have had a lot of the physical gifts and skills, but they needed the right sort of, I guess you could say, things going their way. For Tom, it was not just taking over a Patriots team that was good to go, but being able to actually be under coaching staff and being able to put in work that was able to perfect some of the deficiencies he had, just getting starting reps in general, as he had not really been a starter at Michigan until his last year. I think that what the Cardinals could see this year is going to be some quarterback switching and swapping. And that leads us to at least after the Cardinals' third season, preseason game, I should say, they got busy. They made a plethora of trades. They at least made a deal. First one that popped up with for Isaiah Simmons, taking their safety position from one of the deepest in the division to, you got two starters and you got no one else after that. The Cardinals and Isaiah Simmons, we'll talk a little bit more about some of this week. I felt like that a lot of the issue with Isaiah Simmons was that for every single positive he would have in one position, there were negatives that came along with it. If you're talking about him as a linebacker, he struggled a lot with not just responsibilities and eye discipline, but he was a willing run tackler who just ultimately would be able to run kind of in a straight line type of athlete speed, be able to make plays up the middle was what you'd hoped he could be. But then when it came to those linebacker spots of covering tight ends or having to be able to essentially in single coverage, be able to take on crafty route runners, you're kind of as strong as your weakest link, and his weakest link has always kind of been the fact that when you're a top defensive back, they call it flexible hips, that you can kind of quickly change direction with your hips, or fluid hips. The gold standard, I think, for this was Tyrann Mathieu coming out as a rookie. He was a guy that if you tried to change direction on him and get him off from where he would be moving to his left, his body is tilted to the left, suddenly you cut back inside, he would be able to flip his hips like an instant. And that was one of the reasons why he was such a dynamic safety in coverage in his first few years for the Arizona Cardinals. Isaiah Simmons is not necessarily that guy. I felt like that he was maybe a bigger version of that or Buddha, but that was always one of the issues that he was going to have in coverage, which is a complaint a lot of people had in looking at his draft profile. Their idea, at least, of him moving to the Giants and being used as more of an edge rusher has come up. The one game I'll say, if you want to watch back, he did play previously as an edge rusher as the Cardinals back in 2020 tried to find the best spot for him. 2021 was another game in which he did see some blitzes. I think actually he was benched in 2021, unless I'm mistaken. But 2020, he lined up and was just owned by the right tackle of the Washington Commanders. He was just kind of bullied around. It was also a place where you can say that he's a willing but not necessarily great run defender. There's all of the tools that I think you have there, but as far as when it came to some of those aspects of the mental part of the game and the hips, I think that he lined up best as a safety who could blitz, and then being able to be essentially this, this third down pass rush specialist who you could put in essentially as a guy to cover guys out of the slot, a big slot, and be capable. But ultimately, that was the position that I felt like he was best in, was safety, because you don't want to necessarily have an edge rusher who will give up the edge in the run game. This is something that the Cardinals have seen over the years, whether it was the pluses or minuses of Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden. The Cardinals were at their best as a defense when you look back on that team that was able to see those strong defensive linemen up front and actually have some discipline in the run game on the edge, because teams would just struggle in terms of being able to run the outside zone, being able to have cutbacks. You'd see issues with the Cardinals in years past, the eye discipline, they get sucked into the run game that would allow a free boot by a Jared Goff or a Matthew Stafford of the Rams running that McVay offense. And Isaiah Simmons ended up getting caught up in a lot of that too. I think that he's shown everything that you've kind of wanted to as a Cardinals player up until this point. And at the end of the day, you really have to look at this Cardinals team and say, on one hand, yes, Isaiah Simmons was partially failed by the Arizona Cardinals. But on the other hand, the Cardinals also, I think, failed him by looking at his athleticism and measuring him not necessarily about who I think he was, but who they thought Isaiah Simmons could be. They saw him as a guy who could be this hyper-athletic, all-over-the-field sort of player, being able to make any types of things happen. And I think that ultimately he was just lacking one of the different pieces in defensive line, or I should say edge rusher and linebacker. And even at the position that I felt he was a best fit at, in safety, he would do well as far as when closing from the free area of being able to run in a straight line, making that pass breakup, of blitzing when he was having to hunt the quarterback on assignment, when running to fill some of those run gaps. I feel like that we saw times in the preseason where there were flashes enough to say this might be his spot. The thing that popped up, though, was when the team dropped back into man and zone coverage, either Simmons was playing it as a zone responsibility when it was more man, or he was just really struggling when having to be able to push guys off of their routes, of being able to disrupt it. Something just was not quite there. And he's with the Giants now. I think that he's a person where, if you're talking about the end of the day, most people will compare in that 2020 draft and look back and say that you could have had a Tristan Wirfs, you could have had a CeeDee Lamb. The biggest decision for the Cardinals was they decided they were going to take a defensive playmaker that year, that that was the biggest need. I think in hindsight, you could say Wirfs has grown into one of the best tackles in the NFL. The Cardinals don't necessarily have CeeDee Lamb as high as they should have. Kyler Murray, obviously, as we all know, stumped for both players. But I think at the end of the day, the team building that Arizona wanted was, we want a linebacker who can make plays. And then in year two, they realized, we still don't have that middle linebacker because that's not Isaiah Simmons' game. And as a result, that's part of why you saw at least the issue with Steve Keim. Instead of bringing in a couple of veteran linebackers who were able to be able to at least man the position, had experience, he seemed like he just wanted to be able to have that young guy locked up for a long period of time on a cost-controlled contract. Brings out Zaven Collins, who's been able to at least be a starter for the Cards this year, but at the end of the day is not able to click. The same way with Josh Jones, a guy who I celebrated, loved the Cardinals taking. I felt that he could be a starting left tackle in due time. At that point, the Cardinals were coming off of a DJ Humphreys, had actually been playing some of his best seasons as a pro. It was just, you're going to have to figure out one way or the other. Are they going to extend Humphreys? Are they going to move on? Is this going to be a position where Arizona will get their right tackle positions filled? And surprise, surprise, we ended up seeing Kelvin Beachum take that job for the next few years versus Josh Jones. While Jones made multiple starts and kind of cemented himself as a left tackle, I feel like on one hand you can say it's a negative because the Cardinals were not able to get to that second contract with him. They moved on to a different offensive lineman. Maybe some of that is Jones not living quite up to the expectations. I think that there's an entire thing to be said about how for a lot of offensive linemen, we can look at them in pass protection, but then when it comes to the run game and the impact that they're making, so many teams have shown that it really is important that their run game is solid. And I think if there's one thing to say about Josh Jones, it's that he was a solid, solid tackle, but never showed himself to be in that elite category. And when you're talking about a guy who's very good, what they did essentially was they traded Josh Jones and moved on from him in a way that made you realize that this would have normally been a problem, I think, if we talked about this last year. But they had Kelvin Beachum signed under a two-year deal. His contract was guaranteed. Josh Jones is looking to get playing time, not just ride the bench, to get that new contract. So you're serving the player as well, which in years past may not have been as much of the case. But Josh Jones went to the Houston Texans with a seventh-round pick for the Texans' 2024 fifth-round pick. The Texans have had their right tackle injured for a while. This will at least, if not give them depth, be able to at least spell Tytus Howard for a little bit, where they're able to get by with having a guy who started before and be able to potentially see if he can develop into something long-term. And at worst, if you get a compensatory pick after he walks to another team next year, if you're the Texans, you may get as high as a third or fourth if he balls out. If you're the Cardinals, you'll happily take that fifth round pick from the Texans. And then we saw exactly what the Cardinals did with that pick. They went out and grabbed another quarterback in Josh Dobbs. And this is where there's a group chat, at least, that we have with a couple of the other Cardinals podcasters. This would be PHNX with Johnny. This is Seth and Jess from the Revenge of the Birds. I should say the Seth from Revenge of the Birds, Jess from Cards Wire. They have their own co-podcast that they run. The first reaction that we had to the trade was, is this a move for your starter? Because we looked at Colt McCoy, there hadn't been any indication that he was going to be the starter because there hadn't been clarity offered by Jonathan Gannon. But at that point, we had assumed if you're not going to roll with Colt to begin with and then Clayton Toon, from everything we'd saw, Clayton Toon looked like he was the more capable guy than Colt McCoy. Then it came up to, are you going to try to really start a fifth-round rookie and not have a veteran backup? Because if Colt McCoy was going to stick around on this team, then the only way that I think it made sense would have been moving to a coaching position or essentially an emergency quarterback three spot, because you could tell his arm was done. We've talked it to death throughout this season in coverage. First practice went to Colt McCoy instead of throwing the ball, didn't throw the ball at all, just pointed. I think what the Cardinals wanted to do was to have Colt McCoy kind of get that first shot. I think they would have loved to have bring in a Jacoby Brissett. Even Josh Dobbs, we know, is someone they had interest in. At the end of the day, they wanted to see if they could make it work with Colt, give him the summer off, give him some rest, and it was not able to work. He ended up getting released from the team at the end of the day. And it's a sad era because this is a guy who's been a capable and decent backup quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals during a time in which they haven't been able to really say that as a franchise for years past that they've had a backup quarterback who's been able to go out and win games for them up until the last few years. If you look at Drew Stanton being able to win games, we talked at least about being able to see ultimately with the first few years of Cliff Kingsbury about not even having a capable backup quarterback that when Kyler gets hurt against the Rams, the Cardinals are just done. They have no way they can win the game, skipping over Brett Hundley to get to their third string guy. Being able to see the wins that Colt McCoy did, and then while also still seeing the limitations we saw a year ago, my hope is that people will take away from it a lot more of a better opinion of what Kyler Murray and what a starting quarterback does bring to this team. And for a lot of Cardinals fans, I think when we saw them play against the Rams and their worst, that awful defense that they had, I think a lot of people were like, hey, Colt McCoy, he's just in a better spot. He's ready to go. He's ready to show up. And then we got to see them against the next few teams. Yeah, we got to see them against the San Francisco 49ers. And that was kind of when I think fans realized, oh, yeah, this is a team that's really not going to go anywhere without Kyler Murray. Colt, of course, gets hurt against the Broncos, and the Cardinals lose out that season. We'll always have that one Rams win, but at the end of the day, you just got to see at least with against the Rams they get the win. And it's the Seahawks game that just were not able to even come close. And you're able to see it at the end of that season just how important a decent backup quarterback is. I think best case scenario, Josh Dobbs is a guy that you could say could just be the quarterback, and you'd want to have Clayton Toon show out to be able to win that job for week one. But right now, I think the answer to the Cardinals quarterback question, it's not that they are trying to keep a lock and key surprise or keep stuff confidential to have an advantage. We already saw in 2019 when Cliff Kingsbury tried that with Kyler Murray and unleashing that air raid offense after trying to hide it throughout the preseason. Teams were ready for it. Now, the answer is that there's not a good answer between we don't know who our quarterback is, or we don't have a quarterback, or hey, we're hoping that the guy who just came onto the roster that we just traded for can be able to win the job in the next 6 weeks. People say, well, why didn't you trade for him sooner? It may get into some more of that nitty-gritty that may not be as flattering to someone such as Colt McCoy or others. It may end up being a place where you're kind of hurting the confidence of the young rookie in Clayton Toon, who may end up being your starter. At the end of the day, the answer really is, I think of this of this is like something out of like the movies or something like that. In terms, I think, yeah, Despicable Me. In terms of money, we have no money. In terms of quarterback, Kyler's not on the roster. We have no quarterback. That's where the Cardinals are right now. And I think that this is what's led a lot of people to wonder, are the Cardinals just throwing in the towel on the season? And I think that the answer is no, but not necessarily in that same way of contending or competing as you might think. We'll talk about that over here in a second, at least as we reach the second part of the program, as well as a little bit of why everyone keeps talking about this Cardinals team and Caleb Williams. How did he even look in his first game? Is this even a guy that the Cardinals are worth tanking that is worth tanking for? That'll be here as we wrap up today on the Redbird Reboot Podcast. And look at that contract and say, oh yeah, that player. All right, welcome back to the Redbird Reboot Podcast. So let's talk about this with the Cardinals team right now, because their cuts that they made with their 53-man roster, they went from about 90 all the way down to 53. It's one cut, and this is a first for Cardinals fans. I'm sure this will be talked about on other podcasts, but normally when the Cardinals make these cuts, they go at the last minute that we actually get to see them, which in old days would be you get down from 90 to 75, and then you get from 75 to 53 after that last preseason game. And that would usually drop at like 5 p.m. on a Saturday night. That has been replaced with this Tuesday deadline where all the roster cuts are made. We've also seen it turn into kind of a trade deadline free-for-all for this year. This year is the year of teams just swapping or finding kickers. They'd try out a couple guys in camp, see who was healthy by the end of it, and then add someone else's kicker. This is the initial 53-man roster. What we've seen with Arizona is ultimately that they were not keeping four quarterbacks. They've got two that have been on the roster. The report has been that David Blau will have to find a new home, but the Cardinals coaching staff did like Jeff Driskel coming in. He was hurt, and he's actually played a lot of games, has a bit of athleticism. I think that's going to be your third string slash emergency quarterback on the practice squad. I would have been fine with moving to David Blau, but he may be able to catch on as a third string quarterback for another team, so that may be something you look for. Most of their wide receivers, at least, that they had that were tryouts were cut. The lack of surprise is the biggest thing that came up, at least. Cardinals only have kept two safeties. Corey Clement was let go. Most of this, I think, we learned from the third preseason game, in which it felt very much like Corey Clement's spot on the roster was maybe in jeopardy. And that was when Jesse Luketa, the Cardinals' seventh-round edge rusher, got snaps at fullback and actually looked good doing it. He caught a pass, was able to block well, and you feel like that if he's a guy that I can say there's any comparison for him, a lot of people raved about not just his character, about his effort level coming out, and about his special teams ability. The hope, at least, you'd have for him is that you could be looking at Dennis Gardeck 2.0. Now, I don't know if that means he's going to end up as a starter like Dennis Gardeck did this year or a 7-sack season. But if you're talking about a guy who he's the personal punt protector on punts, he's running in there and getting into it as a fullback, he's being able to line up as an edge rusher potentially or be a depth type of an edge rush player, that's a guy that can stick around on a lot of rosters for a long time. Maybe never a special teams ace, but, you know, an Ezekiel Turner guy who stuck around for a long time. There's plenty of those guys. And I think the best thing about all of this with him is that whether he's had fullback experience before from high school previously or said he could do it, a lot of times it's just that willingness and that effort that you're able to put into the position and recognizing that there's some inherent gifts and traits that are there. Like, I could put in as much effort as I wanted to, and I could not do what Jesse Luketa does just because of who he is, the traits he was born with, all of that goes into it. But I think it does say a lot about this Cardinals team that we're not just going to give this position to a guy who we know who came with us on the team, but instead we're giving it to the guy who's worked his behind off for the position. And I think that is very refreshing when it comes to this Cardinals team. Now, the only other, I think, surprise cuts maybe were Rashard Lawrence in the defensive line, because we'd seen him get starting time before. He just looked like he was a shell of himself, unfortunately. ASU linebacker Kyle Sowell just looked too slow out there. And then, of course, you can say that the Cardinals wouldn't be complete, unfortunately, without cutting tight end Bernard Sykovitz and then adding him back to the roster as a essentially international player, where you have an exemption for him to try to get more players who've never played football in the NFL. Maybe this will be the last year for him, unless someone else pops up. It's a new regime. They do ultimately have a need, probably, for four tight ends this year. It'll be interesting to see if there's anything that pops up with him. Looking at the overall team roster right now, there is one other name that at least stands out to me, and that would be wide receiver Daniel Arias, who makes the roster. This is one of the guys I did predict could make the roster, and I think that may have been an upset to many. The Cardinals at least kept him with the other receivers, which would include Marquise Brown, of course, Rondale Moore. We're talking about Zach Pascal and Greg Dortch, of course. They ended up keeping four tight ends and six wide receivers. Arias was someone that he's got size and he's got catching ability at 6'3", 216. That I think the reason why the Cardinals kept him is because at that size and with the flashes he'd shown, even though he played with the third team, I am pretty sure that he would have gotten picked up by some team, maybe not on a waiver claim, but given him a different opportunity. if not in a 53-man roster. So that was one, at least, that it seemed just from the size capability that they had him as a depth player. In case one of Zach Pascal or Michael Wilson goes down and you suddenly are just needing a guy who can line up and knows the offense with size, he's going to be able to fill, I think, that role. We'll see if he lasts on the team or if he ends up being one of the first ones cut. Other things I think that we can take away from this roster. Biggest one, of course, and this is one that's toughest, is the IR for Cardinals draft pick John Gaines. He tested into a really positive athletic tier where essentially a lot of guys come on to have long careers as NFL interior linemen. The Cardinals liked what they had in Hjalte Froholt. He'd been kind of slated in as the backup center / swing guard. I think that the original plans would have been that they start some of the veterans like Will Hernandez, start Elijah Wilkinson. Maybe when the young guys get a chance late in the season, he'd see some snaps at guard, and perhaps they viewed him as a long-term fill-in at one of those guard positions. Him getting hurt may or may not derail his career in the NFL. It depends on the seriousness of the leg injury. Some players we see are able to come back from it. Some players just are not the same after that, unfortunately. I think of a Jonathan Cooper type who had probably a more serious leg injury, although we'll see exactly what happens with this. He gets rolled up by his own teammate, goes off on the first snap. Gaines is one of those players that I think you had a lot of hope that he could be one of those guys for the future in, and so it's disappointing to see him leave this year. Dennis Daly, it seems like maybe short-term out for the team. He did end up, I believe, and end up on the Cardinals roster, or at least should be not hurt enough where I think he was worth cutting him for. I think that you could see him a little bit short-term for the most part, not necessarily playing. It's going to be a rough sledding go for the Cardinals. Guys who went to the reserved injured list also include Pat Elflein. Hurt players can sometimes stay hurt. And then Marlon Mack, who, of course, tore his Achilles already this year. The biggest thing, I think, to take away from this Cardinals roster overall, though, is that you see a lot of young players, and on the defensive side, not a lot that's been proven. While on the offensive side, it's kind of this mix of veterans and young players trying to make an impact in the league. You're able to see, at least you've got, hey, all right, here's a Josh Dobbs. This is a guy that's been around for, you know, a handful of years. You're talking about a guy who's been around for at least, I think it's 7 years or so. He's been with the Steelers. He's been with the Browns, been with the Titans. You got him paired up with a rookie in Clayton Tune. You have a James Conner who's been in the league for half decade plus. You got him with a Keyonte Ingram and an Amari DeMarcado, a rookie and a second-year player, a sixth-round pick and an undrafted guy. And you've got a guy who's been around for a while in Dennis Gardeck, and you got a young or a rookie player, at least, with a B.J. Ojulari, a Myjai Sanders. And then you got a Zaven Collins entering his third year in the league. And, of course, you have Hjalte Froholt, who's just kind of getting started in the league. And then you got long-term guys like Will Hernandez, DJ Humphreys, Kelvin Beachum in the depth, and Paris Johnson as the rookie who would be starting with the team. Every draft pick made the teams thus far. I think that two of the ones that we will see on are Catrell Clark, and I've liked a lot of the flashes I've seen from Dante Stills. I do wonder if that ends up being a guy who can rotate in maybe in years two or three for the Arizona Cardinals. We'll find out exactly what they have. But right now, the biggest thing I think we can take away from preseason, from rosters, is that this is a team that whatever the plan was at quarterback, they've kind of gone and had to blow it up. And when you look at how their schedule lines up for this year, Kyler Murray, it's really hard to see if they're going to win a game without him. They would have to be able to beat Washington, who's seen a strong showing from their fifth-round pick, Sam Howell, with Eric Bieniemy running that offense. A brutal defensive line, where even with the Cardinals' run game that we've seen having some diversity, you're either having a fifth-round rookie or a guy in Josh Dobbs who ultimately the Cleveland Browns were content to move on from. And I think that's just the whole nature of this season, is there are going to be struggles this year. Now, the question I think that's on everyone's mind is, who's going to be the starting quarterback when is Kyler coming back? And then the last question that has been posed by some today is Cardinals quarterback Kyler Murray coming back? And this is something that I've talked about for a while, which is that there's a chance Kyler is not necessarily going to play this year. And a part of it is you look at Arizona's opening schedule, you look at the time frame, he does start on the PUP list or the player unavailable to practice list. I don't know if he or Garrett Williams will for sure play this year. I think Kyler is more likely to play. But the thing that it comes down to is that Kyler Murray and his contract situation, he is set no matter what happens, which is part of why I felt very good about him pushing for that contract last offseason. If you look at a place where Kyler gets hurt entering this year, is in the last year of his deal, doesn't have a long-term deal, he may end up just having his rookie quarterback contract and then have to go year to year in the NFL and never gets to have that large payday. That is something that every kid wants, and that's something that a player like Kyler Murray, who took the Cardinals at the bottom of the league, got them to that 7-0 status, got them even to the playoffs, and then played poorly last year. Things just went out of control with an awful, awful season. I don't begrudge players at all for getting paid. What's tough about that is that the Cardinals have to essentially pay Kyler Murray at least a certain amount of guaranteed money over the next few years. And if he gets injured, then all of that money, at least for sure, would become guaranteed for, say, 2025. And that just makes sense, ultimately. If you're Cardinals player, Cardinal Murray, and you come back in 2023 and you get hurt, then when the Cardinals are looking at 2024, you're going to have to essentially try to see if you even wanted to move on from him. And that also depends. You know, Kyler may come back. He may win out for all that we know and be able to show a mastery of the offense. Getting the Cardinals a top six pick, then you can say that's pretty reasonable, because this Cardinals team is one that, in a lot of ways, I think, is going to have that narrative against them of, oh, no one believes in us. No one's going to be able to say that we can do this. And that's something that we've seen over the years. Even a Cardinals team like the 2018 Arizona Cardinals that had Josh Rosen at quarterback, that had to bring in Chase Edmonds to run the ball. That day, their defense balled out against the Green Bay Packers. Their offense put points on the board. Chase Edmonds had a rushing touchdown, and you got to see that Cardinals team that had previously just beaten a bad couple of backup quarterbacks at the Niners was able to go out and get that win against Aaron Rodgers, against Super Bowl winner Mike McCarthy. It's part of that any given Sunday that we love about the league. Now, that being said, when you look at this situation, and a lot of people can say, are the Cardinals tanking or not? Here's the way that I think you can look at it. The idea, at least when someone says they're tanking, obviously comes into a place of a team is losing, they're cutting bait, they're trading players for pennies on the dollar. They are essentially trying to be the worst team to earn as many high draft picks as possible to infuse the roster with more talent. This is something that in the NBA, things got so bad that you would see backup players for all five just go out there and have to basically just play out a season so that the team could have a chance at a top player, given how much a top player affects a team. It would be like if you saw a team go out there like the Cardinals last year, and they're like, all right, we want to make sure that we get a top three pick because we want to trade down for next year. We're going to go and just bench Kyler Murray for the rest of the season. We're going to go and bring in, the third string QB, Trace McSorley. Get out there, Trace. It'll be fun, you know. We're not even going to have Colt McCoy go out there because what's he going to do? You would see then teams that would move to a draft lottery system, and some have said that this is what the NFL would need to do as well. Now, my take on this is that when you really look at it, the NBA draft lottery, it kind of sucks. Like you see years ago where teams kind of put all this hope and stock into it, and then they don't even get to pick sometimes in the top five or six picks, despite going through a rough season. And when it comes to losing, a lot of teams you'll see anyway will often just take that chance and will still look at either sitting players or not competing as much. And I think that's part of where with the football and the NBA seasons, there are just differences. In the NFL, there are 16 games. You want each one to count. The idea, at least, of being able to go out and resting for a couple of games is something you can afford in the NBA. But in the NFL, it's just not something you can do. Guys are pushed to their limit. I think what the NBA should look at doing potentially is not necessarily taking out the draft lottery, but at the end of the day, expanding what they've done for the most part in being able to have more teams feel like they've got that shot at being able to make a playoff berth or a playoff run. But even last year, the Dallas Mavericks, guys got shut down. They were looking at a chance for a lottery pick. They had very slim chance to even move up at all. And we still saw their team be non-competitive down the stretch. Now, when it comes to the NFL, the teams that have had the closest, I think, as far as with tanking type of season we've seen in the years past, the 2012 Colts are a great example. You can talk at least about the year before Sam Bradford with the Los Angeles Rams. In recent years, you can even say that the 2018 Browns bringing Hugh Jackson back, taking a second-round project type of quarterback. A team like Miami Dolphins had the Tank for Tua campaign that the fans put up everywhere. And we even know that the owner, Stephen Ross, was upset when his team was winning games with Brian Flores. And I think that at the end of the day, the question at least is, should teams be rewarded for good play or for negative play? What ultimately is fair in the league? And then at the end of the day, it's also about what isn't even just fair, but what just kind of happens. Like the Arizona Cardinals in 2018, some people are saying, hey, they hired Steve Wilks. They're planning to tank. This is how it went. I don't think that team was intending to fire Steve Wilks or have that terrible start that they did. I think that the team felt that they could probably put together a solid 6-10 wins, have a veteran quarterback that has Josh Rosen be the new guy, take over for him, keep a lot of what they'd been doing on the defensive side moving forward, and making plays to Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson as their main weapons, not necessarily spending big money on a receiver. And boy, the suspension for Steve Keim and the subsequent chaos that erupted ended up being almost a perfect storm for the Cardinals to end up with that number one pick. Not necessarily through, as people would say, tanking, but due to incompetence, which is one of the things that we see happen in the National Football League. Incompetence can happen in many different ways, such as taking over from previous regimes' incompetence. I think you look at the Matt Nagy-led Chicago Bears that also had the previous Ryan as their GM before Ryan Poles. They were a team that really did not have a lot of stars, and they had just drafted a new quarterback, and that was kind of what they had. They end up going and getting the number one pick, and you see the Texans compete last minute with a few teams all in this place of a Cardinals team that thought they would try to run it back with players and repeat that just completely fell apart due to injury, being outcoached, and chaos within the front office. You saw a Broncos team that definitely fell apart and gave a top five pick to Seattle. And you saw an Indianapolis Colts team that tried to finally get stuff with their quarterback situation resolved, only to see the end of that era where Matt Ryan is essentially benched, is not able to play, and they go out and draft Anthony Richardson with a new look on the offensive side and Frank Reich going to the Panthers. Tanking is something that I think in the NFL is less a mindset and more a series of moves that are combined together over a longer period of time that seem to be intentionally crafted. Like the best example you can look at is the Miami Dolphins that season. They wanted Tua Tagovailoa the following year. They put together a team that had some journeyman veteran backup quarterbacks. They started several of those quarterbacks, and their defense eventually ended up doing pretty well despite the lack of the moves that they had made. You got to see how Brian Flores was able to be a great coach for a team. Now, at the end of the day, they did get Tua. They got the rookie quarterback contract. They got a guy who's talented enough to be able to do more than what those starters in Fitzmagic and others could. But it was a case where instead of going out and saying, hey, we're going to make a push for the playoffs this year, they recognized it was a retooling year. Now, people are saying the Cardinals are tanking, and the way that I would look at it is, are you talking about tanking as in trying to lose games, or are you talking about not being competitive in games? Because there's a huge difference between we're going to go out there and compete in games even though we're not a competitive team. And that's what I think you can see from the Detroit Lions a few years ago. The Lions in the 2019 season, they had moved on from their quarterback. They had very little talent left over. They had a few draft picks that were rookies trying to come along. And they had a brand new coach and general manager. And they were a team that realized, hey, we're not going to win a lot this year, but we're going to at least bite at teams' ankles and we're going to annoy them. It's almost like that college football where you see those small teams, like a few years ago, I think at least, of a Jacksonville State with Dion, or even before Dion, there were other small teams that you could see in the college football tournament that just kind of stick around and are made of an annoyance. It's a team that doesn't have that same talent level as the others, but they are at least following what the coaches are doing. They're well coached. And even if you do end up seeing them be a team that loses games with a margin or a score, it's not like it's as large of a margin or score as like we're getting blown out like 33-3 each week. It's more that, you know, you're keeping some of the game a bit closer. You're actually able to get a turnover at some point. You're able to make the win, and all right, you end up with a score of 21-10. You're still down, you know, trying to throw the ball on fourth down, down by two scores at the end of the game, but it's not the blowout that you're expecting it to be. That's where I call it the competing while not competitive approach. And I feel like that's the approach the Arizona Cardinals are trying to take this year. This isn't a Bruce Arians comes in, says, yeah, we can win right away, and goes 10-6 with adding veterans, putting Carson Palmer back there, getting Levi Brown the heck out of Dodge. It's not a team where you're giving it to Steve Wilks and saying, hey, this is a roster that went 8-8 last year. We may be not be a playoff team this year, but we should at least be able to, you know, lose more than we win, but we'll at least be respectable. We'll at least have a decent offense. We'll have a decent run game. We'll have a decent defense while we're adjusting. That was something that never took place for the Cardinals. So I think that's where I would say is that the difference from people are saying, are the Cardinals actively trying to lose games? And if you look at the players that they had on their team, and I think you can say this, when you look at the Cardinals and said, I think that if they had started Colt McCoy week one, it would have been very clear and very apparent that he was not able to really play the game of football anymore. At least to the level of being able to run a play action game, running deep passes. The Cardinals, you could question, could they have reached out and spent a bit more on a veteran quarterback? And I think to some degree you could say, man, they could have. But to another degree, when you're talking about Arizona, they are coming off of a league-worst survey, having a brand new team and staff that came in, having fired just about everybody in their department, and a lot of drama. The amount of quarterbacks, at least, in the free agent market who have not just come to Arizona, but also would have fit into a place of, hey, we're signing a Jacoby Brissett, we're paying a little bit more for him, but he's going to be our starter throughout the year. I think what Arizona wanted to do was to be able to see how things went for Kyler, see how it went for Colt McCoy, but we knew they were always going to add a quarterback of some degree. I think, though, now that people are seeing in this process, it's turned into a anytime Arizona makes a move of some form of prepping for the future or moving on from a guy that maybe doesn't fit, people are going to associate that with the tanking and the trying to not compete or trying to lose football games. Now, if you're saying that the Cardinals were trying to lose football games, you know, the joke is you just put Isaiah Simmons at least out there in the worst possible role for him. And I don't think that this Cardinals staff is looking to do that. This is a staff that comes from winning cultures, that realizes that they're going to have to try to put together something new. And even I think in the first year of the Eagles with Jalen Hurts as their starter, we really did get to see a lot of that team be able to turn stuff around by the end of the season, while at the same time they still would get blown out a time or two. Now, the Cardinals don't have that Jalen Hurts type guy on their roster. They do in Kyler Murray. But if you told someone that the best way to build a football team is to find a franchise quarterback and be able to surround him with talent, then the question I've asked ever since this combine is, do the Cardinals believe in Kyler Murray enough to do that? Because Kyler, at this point, he's a veteran quarterback. He'll come in, he's expected to be able to know the offense, make plays for the team. Even if he was to, say, be out for the entire season, if you have that belief and that faith in Kyler Murray, it's like with Joe Burrow. The Cincinnati Bengals didn't just simply say, we're going to go ahead and you know, maybe we'll get the number one pick next year. Joe is out. No, they still competed as best as they could and tried to look at themselves coming back and added additional weapons for him in the hopes of Ja'Marr Chase. Finally, this year, they've been able to craft a bit better offensive line. And I think that if you're the Cardinals and you believe that Kyler Murray is your player, that's your quarterback going forward, then I think that you would probably take a look at your roster and say, hey, what we need right now is we could get that top-tier pass rusher. He comes in as a rookie. We're able to then have a guy who can make those plays on the defensive side of the ball. Kyler comes back. We've cleared up some of the cap space available. Let's either re-sign some guys. Let's bring a couple of free agents in. Let's use this draft that we have that's probably going to be a relatively decent pick. Those would be the moves that you'd be making. And what did the Cardinals do? Not what did they say about Kyler Murray, but what did they do is I think what you want to look at. And without reading into it, without saying anything extra, what they did was they sold on that number three pick, traded back a ways for 2024 picks, while also adding a right tackle that could play now, a guy that Kyler Murray even actually advocated for. But what that really meant was that they liked next year's draft better than this year's draft in more ways than one. But because next year's draft is a quarterback-heavy draft, and because the Cardinals didn't sign a lot of guys in free agency, and because Kyler Murray is still recovering and there's been a lot of questions, it really does make people wonder if this has been intentional on their part. And let me be honest here. If the Cardinals do move on from Kyler Murray, it's not going to be a wasted pick. It's not going to be a issue. This is ultimately a success case for the Cardinals that was a failure around the likes of a Kyler Murray, while at the same time it can be that sometimes the quarterback is not the guy that you're looking for. The thing, at least as far as when it comes to fit, when it comes to production, everyone's different in the National Football League. One of the things I think with this Cardinals team and where they're at now is they're really on this 2 to 3 year type of a track. Because if you were on a let's get ready for next year type of track, you could have traded back with the Houston Texans, gotten a pick at number six, and not had to worry about getting a first round pick next year. You could have picked up a second and a third round pick. You could have picked up a second this year, a second maybe next year, used that second next year to move on up in the draft. That would have been the moves of a team that believes they can compete in 2024 with their quarterback coming back healthy. And so it makes me wonder, are the Cardinals going to be content with Kyler Murray if he's their guy? I think so. But it does have me wonder if they aren't at least eyeing and saying, if, hey, we have the opportunity to be able to bring one of these quarterbacks in. And I think some of that may circle around Michael Bidwell, who we've seen in the past was happy enough to move off of one quarterback for a more dynamic quarterback, ironically coming out of the Lincoln Riley system, who he had a bit more of a connection to, I think, than the likes of a Josh Rosen. And Caleb, he did have an awesome week this week. Of course, he's supposed to taking on San Jose State. The team put up 50 points. He had an insane throw off of his back foot after a fumble, kind of that typical Heisman moment. And you remember, he's had a lot of those Heisman moments. The thing with the Kyler Murray deal and the thing with taking a new quarterback is that's the quickest way for many teams to get to a Super Bowl because it's kind of a cheat code. Cardinals with Kyler Murray got Steve Keim a contract extension. They were able to win enough games that Cliff Kingsbury and the NFL went close to 500 up until that final season. It shows the power of having a star quarterback. But it also shows that having general managers who don't draft like how Steve Keim would struggle, who are having to then make trades and bring outside talent in, it's easier to bring that talent in because you can pay guys that other teams don't want to pay. It's one of the quickest ways if you're looking to contend, to compete, to get that contract extension. It is one of the quickest ways is hitting on a rookie quarterback. This doesn't even just apply to people say the term generational. Usually I try to reserve that term at least until the gradings are complete. But even just having a rookie quarterback such as Brock Purdy on a deal, we really saw how with Trey Lance not playing, with Brock Purdy on the deal and being able to be a hit as a late round pick or the last pick, Niners were able to keep a lot of their talent in tow, bring guys in, pay the likes of Christian McCaffrey, despite taking on what a lot of people have said was a hefty contract for a running back. at the end of the day, so far at least, if we're going to at least say from whether it's college or that, people are going to say this player's better. People are going to throw stats out there. The biggest thing I think you'll have to say is if Caleb Williams ends up fitting this Cardinals front office and this staff better than the likes of a Kyler Murray, then that may be a move that they make. Heck, that may be a move that I've said that I don't know if they would just make for the first overall pick, saying, oh, this guy is too good. If the Cardinals go through and feel like that Drake May is going to be a better quarterback potentially than Kyler, or if they're picking, say, fifth and there's a guy that they like out there that they feel fits them, that's something I think we should root for, because the Arizona Cardinals have seen success when they found quarterbacks that fit what their direction and vision is, or the direction and vision can help fit them. Kurt Warner went from a backup quarterback to another Super Bowl contender just because he was able to get Todd Haley and others to adjust the system around what his strengths were, not their system and what they were trying to do. We saw Bruce Arians with Carson Palmer. It took some adjustments, but ultimately he was able to get an MVP caliber season out of Palmer that would have ended in the award had it not been for Cam Newton doing the same, just one or two games better in the NFC South. When Cliff Kingsbury came to the Cardinals, he could have worked with Josh Rosen, but he wanted a quarterback that was able to do better out of structure in Kyler Murray, and we saw that when that Cardinals team adopted that vision, things were fine up until they weren't. There were issues ultimately with that vision at the end of the day, but I felt like when the Cardinals made that move, you wanted that vision to at least be succinct, because whenever you've got a split vision, that's when you get seasons like 2022. That's when you get a season in which Steve Wilks, from what we at least know of, was probably a guy that would have taken Lamar Jackson if he was looking for a quarterback. A guy who at least had interviewed or talked with Lamar Jackson some. I know that the teams that did the most homework, at least on Lamar and Josh Rosen, were the Cardinals, the Chargers, and the Saints. Dolphins didn't until they got a new head coach, because Adam Gase talked to Josh and just wasn't his type of guy, wasn't his fit. And I think that ultimately that fit is something that's really important. And so that brings up the question, does Kyler, who's been much more of this, I don't know if you can call him a maverick, I think that's been a little bit of where you've seen, at least, is with some of how he and his agent handled items, some of how his sideline had just been a little bit more isolationist, confrontational, how he had guys, at least on the team, that you'd be able to talk to, but was never really that rah-rah guy. It was kind of that you take care of your business, I'll take care of mine sort of attitude. It was a spot, at least, where the leadership that he showed was usually on the football field. And times when he wasn't on the football field, we would at least get to see some of just how the team really was not equipped to withstand the long term. Because I think ultimately you do kind of need some of that vision to be going from the quarterback to the players. And for what we know about Caleb Williams, there is at least areas of that that he has present, as far as whether it's with film study, whether it's with other places. He's got a very diverse type of background as far as for areas of interests. And so it'll be interesting, because I think the question is not necessarily Caleb or Kyler, because ultimately, at the end of the day, it's is it a question or not? Because if you have the chance to draft a top quarterback this year, I think that for this new regime, it would happen. I think it's done if the Cardinals get the top two picks, maybe even if they get the third overall pick and we see a team take Marvin Harrison Jr. at number two. We'll talk more, at least in the future, at least about Caleb. But right now, the biggest thing I think for a Cardinals fan is not just to simply just say, all right, we're just waiting for next year. We want to make sure and know that if this is going to be a team that does get a new quarterback and then goes from a team that never drafted a first-round QB to getting three over the last 6 years, maybe it's seven by next year, you want to know that this team and that vision, that it's at least preparing the way so that when a quarterback does come, that it's going to be less like the Josh Rosen experience or less like the Kyler Murray experience, where it's an explosion of questions, of comments, of not knowing. And you want it to be more like a team that hadn't had that quarterback in forever, like the Carolina Panthers before Cam Newton, getting to the playoffs that year. Cam, he has had so many similarities in some ways with Kyler. Chiefs with Mahomes, guys like the Buffalo Bills who hadn't been to the playoffs since the 90s. That's what I think you're looking for. And I think that's the spot where you're hoping that you can at least put this trust in Monty Austinfort and Jonathan Gannon. Because right now, that's about all you can really do is be able to either blindly trust them or take it one game at a time and see if they earn that trust from their fans little by little. Not necessarily with wins, but at least in being able to say that, unlike the last regime, when someone asks you if you're an Arizona Cardinals fan, they can say something like, oh yeah, you're that team that's got that high pick for next year. Hey, that was a good job by your general manager. Those Texans got fleeced. Or, oh yeah, that's that Jonathan Gannon guy. Hey, you guys put up a fight against that Niners rushing attack. Like, Brock Purdy took a few sacks. You know, you didn't win the game, but, ooh, I thought they were going to crush you. And, you know, they had to kick a last-minute field goal to win. That's the sort of thing I think you're looking for to be able to build trust, not just now with Cardinals fans, but for the future, because this is that time that they are building for more than just the 2023 season, but for the rest of this 2020 decade. Hey, that's been it for me again. You can listen at least here to this podcast wherever you find podcasts, and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, follow at least on X or Twitter, as I still think it should be called. It's just crazy how it's gone about. At Redbird Reboot is going to be the at. Make sure at least you can follow me as well at BlakeMurphy7. Having a second show this week, should have a guest on with more on that to come for the most part. Thanks so much for tuning in. This has been the Redbird Reboot. It's time to log off.